Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's a breakfast version of Beyond the Bench. Let's have some coffee. Morning, sports fans. It is Sunday, July 21st, 2013. We're finally getting a break from some of the heat that we've had this past week in the New York metropolitan area. It's almost bearable outside. It's actually a beautiful day to be watching some golf on the radio. We have the final round of the British Open going on. So far, it has not been a good day for the leaders through the first couple holes. Tiger Woods is 2 over through 4. Lee Westwood is 1 over. Henrik Stenson is right on his heels and just missed a shot to even it up. We have a lot to go over today. We have NFL training camps opening up in about a week or so. We have the second half of the baseball season getting into full swing after there was a lot of hype about the All-Star game, and it was a real low-key game as it was going on. Wasn't a lot of action. It was dominated by the pitching, especially by the American League. And you saw some real power arms that Jim Leland worked perfectly throughout the second half of the game. The Toronto Blue Jays really put on a show with their bullpen arms. As they were able to get out of a jam and really make things much easier for Jim Leland. The one issue that Jim Leland had, and I completely agree with the decision that he made, was to have Mariano Rivera pitch the eighth inning. There was absolutely no way you can risk, even as good as Jonathan has been all year and throughout his whole career, there's no way you can risk him giving up the lead and not having Mariano Rivera pitch in that game. Granted, it would have been a great scene to have Rivera close the game, get the save. It would have been very fitting, as I think he's now pitched 8 scoreless innings in a row in the All-Star game, which is just unheard of. But it was the right decision, and I apologize to Yankee fans who disagree with me on that. And like I said, I would have loved, even as a Met fan, I would have loved to have seen Rivera get the save. But he had to get into the game. If it were a 7-8-0 game, Leland wouldn't have had any issue. He would have been able to have Rivera go out and pitch the ninth inning. But with them being the road team and the possibility of not having a bottom of the ninth, I am fully on board. I was also fully on board with Rivera getting the MVP. I read a lot of people who were wondering, how do you give an MVP to a relief pitcher, even if it's his last All-Star game, especially with him being the greatest closer of all time. The reason why Rivera I'm okay with the decision to make Rivera the MVP was there was no one else who was in the game that really stuck out. There was no one that really took charge, had a great game. The only one that really stuck out to a lot of people would have been Matt Harvey. You cannot give the starting pitcher who threw two innings of the team that eventually lost the game the MVP. Matt Harvey showed his lightning stuff, and there were nerves. Three pitches into the game, he had two base runners on after allowing a double to Trout as he goes opposite field down the right field line on the first pitch of the game. And then second pitch of the game was had Yankee fans holding their breath with that controversial pitch that hit Cano in the knee. He came out a batter later. But then he goes on, he strikes out Miguel Cabrera, possibly the best hitter in the game. Oh, the best hitter in the game, possibly the best hitter of this generation. And then gets two more outs and works out of a jam, goes through, has a nice, clean second inning, and really gives something for the Met fans to look forward to. Matt Harvey is going to be a special pitcher. I don't see any way, unless there comes an injury, but this guy wants it. And it's also great to see, especially with being a rookie, technically not a rookie, but he's just completing his first full calendar year as a professional. And so it's not a lot of people know what he looks like. And I know some of the skits, some of the bits that are done on Fallon are staged. Whether or not this was or wasn't, and judging by some of the reactions when when they realized that they were talking to Matt Harvey, but to see some of the people, Matt Harvey went out into, I believe it was either Central Park or Bryant Park, and asked Met fans what they thought about Matt Harvey, and none of them knew that they were actually talking to Matt Harvey. If you haven't seen it, I definitely urge you to go YouTube it. It was a classic one, and my favorite person that he talked to was the one that said, "Yeah, I just saw Matt Harvey in the ESPN The Body magazine posing Nick Kidd," and then he shows him the picture, and he goes, "Oh, that's you." So, go if you haven't seen it, definitely go YouTube it. We're going to be joined in a couple minutes by the great Randy Zelia. And we will also be joined by NBA TV's Jared Greenberg. We'll be getting into a little bit of the NBA Summer League and also some stories to look for next year. I want to open up the show. We're going to be talking some Yankee baseball, and the Yankees, as much as a mid-July game can be a must-win, last night was a must-win for the Yankees. Hiroki Kuroda, who has, I know I've said it before, CeCe is getting the money to be their ace, Hiroki Kuroda has been the Yankees' best pitcher since he's on the pinstripes for the first time. He goes out there and he has 7 innings, 2 runs. The Yankees are able to hold off the Red Sox. And in one of the better scenes that we've seen in baseball, the Red Sox fans cheer Mariano Rivera as he comes out for the save in the 9th inning. I know the Red Sox appreciated what the Yankees did for them after the Boston Marathon bombings. The Yankees played, as a tribute to the Red Sox, played Sweet Caroline in the middle of the 8th inning, which is a Boston tradition. And it was greatly appreciated by a lot of Red Sox fans and people within the organization. So, and the Red Sox played New York, New York during the first, I think during the first inning on Friday night. And joining us right now is the one and only founder of Back Sports Page, Randy Zelia. How you doing, my friend?
Good morning, Mr. Stern. It is a Sunday morning, and it's not as hot as it's been, so I guess we can call this a victory.
Oh, I was just going to say, I never thought that 88 degrees could feel so cool.
Well, you know, there's only one place that's probably feeling more hotter than anything right now, and I'm talking about the ticket box office, and that's probably in Brooklyn with all the excitement that's been going on. But, you know, you were like you were just saying before, you know, with the Yankees, what an odd feeling last night to see Mariano Rivera get a standing ovation from a Boston crowd, the same crowd that wanted to lynch him in many appearances throughout the years. I think Mo Rivera is one of the few guys in baseball who's sort of beloved because he did it the right way. And for him to battle back from the injury he had last year, to do as well as he's doing this season, and for this being his final run, this has been a wacky season for the Yankees. So why should this not happen? Because between the injuries and everything else, and only being about 6 or 7 games back from the Red Sox, it felt like it was going to make sense for Mariano to get cheered in Boston.
Oh, absolutely. And I was saying that for a mid-July game, this almost seemed like it was as must-win as there could be for the Yankees last night.
Yeah, I agree with that. The thing is with the Yankees, and I said this on Friday night during my show too, you know, this team's being held together with floss and duct tape. You know, CC Sabathia has not been the dominant pitcher he was since 2009. Andy Pettitte is, you know, not going to say he's old, but his Social Security card is in single digits. and, you know, the rest of their rotation is spotty at best. You know, Nova, you don't know what you're getting from Nova every single night. And then everything else is sort of pieced together. And then, of course, you know, the bullpen is the bullpen. You know, Jabba Chamberlain hasn't been the star we thought he was going to be since 2007, 2008, which, by the way, I still think to this day the biggest mistake you could have done was trying to transition him into being a star. That's another story for
Absolutely.
Another time.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, you have the injuries in the field to Teixeira, Granderson, Jeter, A-Rod, you know, Cano taking a shot at the All-Star game. At the end of the day, and people – this is another separate conversation that we were having, but it comes down to the Yankee fan base has been spoiled through the years, since 2005, only missing the playoffs once. The dynasty of the Yankees was over back in 2001 when that core group was broken up. Now,
you're talking about your Brochuses and your O'Neills and your Gino Martinez. The real heart and soul kind of guys.
The real heart and soul type of guys. And, you know, there's Jose and I were having a conversation, and I forgot the wording that we used about it on the show. So there's a dynasty, and then there's mainstays. And, like, for example, the years that the Atlanta Braves made that long consecutive streak of making the playoffs, they were mainstays. They weren't a dynasty. And after a little while, those mainstays, the fan base becomes very feels like a sense of entitlement. So they stop showing up to games. Listen, last year was the first time that I can remember that playoff tickets for the second round for the AL Championship Series, tickets were available. In New York, when was the last time that happened? So, again, it's a sense of entitlement, and it might be coming to an end this year with the Yankees. And this is coming from a guy who, you know, let's take the media hat off. I'm a Yankee fan. But even I'm naive to falling into that same trap that, don't worry, it's still the Yankees. This is not the Yankee team that will keep bringing back miracle after miracle after miracle. It's just not. And I think Yankee fans are going to be understanding that the playoffs should be appreciated, and they're not just a given fact.
And you mentioned one name, and we'll definitely get into the lightning rod. But before that, I want to welcome into the show, welcome to Beyond the Benches, to NBA TV's own and friend of the program, Jared Greenberg. How you doing, Jared?
Hey, fellas, how are you?
Good, buddy. How you doing? Long time no speak, my friend.
Yeah, man. What's happening?
Not much. Not much. I was just, when Ryan told me that you were coming on, I was like, oh, good. Jared's coming on. So, you know, he and I can go back and forth. Because you and I, for years and years, have been yelling about the NBA. And I have to know, Jared, you know, how did you feel about the Brooklyn trade?
You know, I think I'm torn. I think that for the short term, I think it's a tremendous deal. I think that, you know, just on judging the trade of today, who got the best value, there's no question the Nets got the most value. But if you're concerned about the future of the team and giving up so many draft picks, then I can understand why you would be disappointed and say, you know, it's a win-now mentality, and if they don't win a championship within the next 2 years, then they might be pretty bad after that for a while. But then again, you know, if Mikhail Prokhorov is showing the willingness to spend so much money on a yearly basis and essentially throw away luxury tax money, then who's to say that in a year or 2 years when Paul Pierce and or Kevin Garnett decide to retire that there won't be more money available to go out and get another superstar?
Now, the one thing that everyone is talking about is that the fact that they gave up 3 first-round draft picks. Now, I know you can't trade away consecutive first-round picks, so it's 2014, 16, and 18. Now, if the Nets are one of the top teams in the league, which especially over the next 2 or 3 years, while this present team is constructed the way it is, if the draft picks are in the late 20s, with the way the crapshoot is of the NBA draft, do you still think that in the end the Nets will end up with the better value of this deal?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I just said. That, you know, I think that, you know, you can't project what those draft picks will be. And I think what you're getting to is, yeah, the Nets should be a pretty good basketball team. You know, they should be, you would have to think, at the very minimum, a top 4 seed in the Eastern Conference, at the minimum. So that draft pick is not going to be very high. So why not, you know, take a gamble and say, let's go with 2 guys, possibly, and you could argue, I don't think Jason Terry is a Hall of Famer, but you know, maybe with whatever he does over the next couple of years, you know, you take 3 guys that are extremely good basketball players and you put them onto your team. And not only that, they answer needs that you have. You know, the Nets did not get any production out of the small forward position last year at all. And while they got some really good defensive and rebounding production out of the power forward, they didn't get any offense from there. So you're getting exactly 2 of your biggest weaknesses if they have those guys last year during the Chicago series, there's no doubt in my mind that Nets win it. And not only do they win it, it's probably over in five games at the max.
Jared, I wanted to throw a couple different things at you because you're talking about the Nets being a minimum 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. Let's talk about some of those other teams real quick. The New York Knicks, for what they've given up and what they've lost during this offseason, it seems like they still kept their core, and they added Wanyama from Toronto. Now, here's my thing is Carmelo Anthony, in my mind, is not really going to be an NBA champion until he learns to put the trust in his teammates. Not saying he doesn't trust his teammates, but Jordan bought the best out of his teammates in being a leader and giving up the ball when he has to give up. They didn't really lose much. They still have J.R. Smith, and no, they're adding Wanyama. They need to get some more offense in there to help Carmelo out. Was this the right pickup and re-signing J.R. Smith? Is this the right thing, or should they have gone after and tried to make a bigger splash and even have to part with a guy like a Chandler if need to, because Stoudemire's contract is just unmovable at this point?
Let me dissect the question here. Number one, I couldn't disagree with you more about that they didn't lose much this offseason. They've depleted their bench this offseason. Copeland, Novak, gone. Two guys who were counted on to supply offense off the bench. Then you go ahead and you bring in a guy like Bargnani, who has been downright awful the last couple of years, not to mention all the injuries he's had to deal with the last two seasons. And what position does Bargnani play? You know,
he's
talked to everybody
four.
Around
he's
the
a, Knicks. Yes.
He's
a constant 3-4.
He's not a three. He's 7 foot tall. He's not guarding. There's not one small forward in the NBA that Andrea Bargnani can guard.
That's 100% correct.
If you're going to call him a power forward, then fine. But the problem with that is that everybody's been saying over the last 12 months that Carmelo Anthony's at his best when he plays the four. Okay, so now let's just go and say that you're going to play Bargnani at the four and occasionally play Carmelo at the four. Well, where does Amari Stoudemire fit into this mix? So, to me, you've written more questions than you have answers. And to me, I think the Knicks are a mess right now. You know, I don't think they've gotten any better at the point guard position, which is a huge problem. The Knicks just don't distribute the basketball. And when the Knicks were good last year, they were good because they were hitting three-point shots at a historic pace. And we saw towards the end of the season, and then in the playoffs, it doesn't last. And when you live and die by the three ball, well, you saw the Knicks bow out earlier in the playoffs than many people projected them to. So I just think they have way too many questions. I don't think that they solve their needs. I just think that they – and to me, the biggest thing is how did the Knicks send draft picks to Toronto for Andrea Bargnani? I mean, to me, it should have been going the other way around. Toronto should have given picks to the Knicks for picking up his salary and taking him up.
And, Jared, I'm going to throw a little stat at you, too. A little stat at you, Jared. 26 assists per game for the first 25 games for the Knicks when they got off to that hot start. 26
yeah.
assists per game. So they're moving the ball around.
I guarantee you it's probably around 18 to 21 the rest of the season.
Yeah. No, it was actually lower. It was during that 41-game streak where they were 21 and 20, they averaged 16 assists a game. When they had that hot start, they averaged 26 assists a game. So,
right. There you go.
And then, of course, the Chicago Bulls situation, I think is the most fascinating one of all the top five teams in the East from last year. And the way they got to the second round, and they pretty much did it with, you know, injury-plagued stars and battered. And I really do like the pickup of Dunleavy. You covering the league, I would love to hear your opinion of what the Chicago Bulls are doing this offseason.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, and obviously it all hinges on Derrick Rose, his health, and, you know, where he stands with coming back and how good he'll be. But I think, you know, the Bulls are going to be really, really good. They've added to their bench. You know, I think what Jimmy Butler showed them in the playoffs last year, you know, he's going to be pose a problem for Tom Thibodeau because he might have said, you know, listen, I'm a starter in this league now. That might be the thing. And Luol Deng, who's always a solid player, is coming up to a contract the end of next season. So you'd have to imagine he's ready to put up some big numbers. You know, the bench has always been an issue for the Bulls. You know, 2 years ago when they had the likes of C.J. Watson and John Lucas III and all them, you know, they're pretty good. Nate Robinson's still up in the air. Nobody's really quite sure what's going to happen with him. I'd imagine Chicago will find a way if Nate is willing to stay and maybe compromise on the money that he thinks he would make on the open market. You know, I think that'd be a good fit back for him. But, you know, without a doubt, you know, as long as Chicago's healthy, and it looks like all signs point to them being healthy, there's no reason why you wouldn't think it. And they're a matchup nightmare for every team in the East. So there's no reason to think that they won't contend for the Eastern Conference title this year.
Getting into some of the NBA Summer League, which rookies have really stood out to you in the early games so far?
Not too many, to be honest with you. I would say on the whole, most of them have really struggled. I would say the one guy who's had a pretty good Vegas is Cody Zeller for Charlotte, who looks like he sat out last night's game, but he's been playing pretty good in his first three or four games. Aside from that, it's been a lot of second-year guys that have actually played really well, and, you know, with a year under their belt has impressed the most. Guys like John Henson on Milwaukee has been a beast. Kent Bazemore for Golden State. Kent Bazemore is right now the front runner to be the most valuable player for the Las Vegas Summer League. Golden State has won 12 consecutive Vegas Summer League games dating back to 2010. And they're the top seed now that it's a tournament style this year, and they'll play in the semifinals later on this evening for a right to go to the finals tomorrow night.
Jared, I want to ask you one question, too. We'll just go back to the Eastern Conference for 1 second. The team that pushed the Miami Heat to seven games as well as the Indiana Pacers, their biggest problem in my eyes was when George Hill and some of their other guards got into foul trouble. The backup point guard position for them, they just didn't ever seem like they really trusted DJ Augustine, and they just picked up CJ Watson from Brooklyn. They're getting Danny Granger back. Is Indiana a serious contender for the win of the Eastern Conference now that they are filling in that hole a little bit as well as getting Granger back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Indiana make a move or two before opening night, the end of October, because, you know, I think they've proven they could win without Danny Granger. And the question is, you know, what position does he play? What position does Paul George play? And there might be some value for Granger, even in spite of the injuries. You know, maybe that's not the trade, but I think they definitely do need to make a move. Obviously, they've really upgraded their point guard's position. The bench, you know, is a big question. They weren't able to bring back Tyler Hansbrough. But, you know, I think some other moves they've made have been pretty solid. And like I said, I don't think they're done. I think the maturation of Lance Stephenson was huge during the postseason last year. And if you can give them anything on a somewhat consistent basis off the bench or maybe even they plug him into the starting lineup every once in a while, you know, I think they're really solid. I mean, the East is going to be so much fun to watch. And the thing that you have to keep in mind is that you still call Miami the favorite, but Miami's biggest weakness is scoring from the inside and defending the interior. And you look at Chicago, Indiana, Brooklyn, those teams, their strength right now is scoring on the inside, whether by penetration or by their big men, you know, operating from the post.
Hey, Ryan, I want to let you know, Ryan, real quick, I'm sorry, I have to get off. I wanted to just tell you a quick funny story about Jared. Jared and I covered Kenyon Martin's, like, draft day picking when we were at the Nets practice facility. It was the first time I had ever done anything like that. And it was funny because Jared is younger than I am, but he says to me, just keep your head down, shut up, and just follow me. And ever since then, I learned from that to move forward with what I do now, doing all the stuff with Back Sports Page. So, Jared and I have known each other for a very long time, and I can't say that all the success you're having, Jared, is very well, is all coming off of your good hard work. And so I say thank you for always coming on and helping us out with Back Sports Page. And, of course, I always wish you the best of luck in your future, bud.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. It's really kind of you.
All right, buddy. Ryan, I'll talk
all
to you
right,
soon, bud.
You got it. Jared, one more from me. With the Western Conference, you're looking at a team like Houston. They go out and they make the big splash with Dwight Howard. Do you think, one, that hurts, that helps them more, or do you think it hurts the Lakers?
I think it, without a doubt, helps Houston more. I think Houston has becoming now in the conversation among the elite teams in the Western Conference, and I think it, to a degree, really fits their style. And keep in mind, Houston last year was able to score with the best teams in the NBA, and I think for the most part, we're either ranked first, second, or third in the league in scoring, and a tremendous three-point shooting team. Houston's biggest problem was they couldn't stop anybody ever. So Dwight Howard, a guy who, has a couple of years ago won three consecutive Defensive Player of the Year awards, will drastically improve what their weakness was. And, I think Dwight Howard's getting healthy. Keep in mind, he played with a bad back, bad shoulder last year. And I think, he gets healthy. And Houston's going to be a very, very dangerous team.
Well, Jared Greenberg, I want to thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning. And if you want to let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter or on NBA TV.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Jared. Have a good one.
You too, man. Thank you.
All right, that is the great Jared Greenberg. You can find him on Twitter at NBA TV Jared, NBA TV Jared. The first ever radio show that I co-hosted with Randy, we actually broadcasted out of the Ramapo College studio. And we had Jared on when he was working for I believe he was working for MSG Varsity and also covering the Mets. So it's a little bit of a different conversation than the first time that I had, but every time that we've spoken to Jared, he's an absolute great guest. He's one of the more knowledgeable guys that I've had the pleasure of speaking to throughout, especially with basketball, throughout all 30 teams. So once again, I want to thank Jared for a couple minutes this morning. Transitioning back into a little bit of baseball with the Yankees, I was talking to Randy about it, and I wanted to get Randy's take on Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez is saying that he's going to make his return tomorrow night in Texas. One, I think it's perfect that he should be making his debut on the road. I think that it'll be too much pressure based on everything that's been going on off the field if he makes his debut in New York. So, with that said, I think that it was tough for him because the two teams that the Yankees played on the road coming out of the All-Star break are the Red Sox, who are the Yankees' major rival and have been for almost 100 years, and then the Texas Rangers. This is the Texas Rangers ball club that signed him to the largest contract in professional sports history. It was 10 years, $252 million. It was the first ever kind of contract of that, the length, the amount of money, and just the precedent that that contract set. And to be honest, he lived up to a lot of it, and he earned most of what he signed for in Texas. But then we also find out that that's where a lot of the performance-enhancing drugs thing started. So now you're looking at, he has to choose whether or not to go to open up his season in Boston or in Texas. He's probably hurt the Texas Ranger fans more than he's got under the skin or really gotten the hatred, the full hatred from the Boston Red Sox, only because of the trade that seemed to be forced when he left Texas to go to the Yankees. The money that he demanded from the Rangers, and the fact that with the performance-enhancing drugs, it gives the Texas Rangers organization a real blow. Remember, they also were the organization that Rafael Palmeiro was playing for when it was found that he was that he got suspended for performance-enhancing drugs after he had his famous finger point into Congress's face saying, "I have never used these kind of drugs," and then he gets suspended. So I don't want to buy into the whole drama of Alex Rodriguez situation. But I know I'm going to. I'm going to be in front of the TV tomorrow night, if tomorrow night actually is the night that he makes his debut. Whoa. A big turn of events so far in the British Open. Lee Westwood was holding a 3-stroke lead and put one into the bunker, tried to hit one out of the bunker, and failed to get it out. He is now on his third shot on a par 3, still in the bunker. So you're looking at a probable, at least a bogey, probable double bogey, depending on how he gets the shot. And if he doubles, that means Henrik Stenson is now tied for the lead. Tiger Woods has been awful so far this morning. Oh, that's a pretty good shot by Westwood. Looks to be about 20 feet away to try and save a bogey. But Tiger Woods has not been very good this morning. Lefty has been sticking around. He's one under for the round. He's one over for the tournament, a couple shots off. If Westwood fails to save this bogey, he will be within two. It looks like we're set up to have a very exciting back nine for the British Open. Let's transition a little bit into NFL. The NFL football training camps open up this week. One of the big things, one of the big news stories this past week has been Jerry Jones putting his foot in his mouth again and saying that the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl again. And he also came out and said that Jason Garrett has to win the Super Bowl if he wants to maintain his job. Jerry Jones needs to learn how to shut up. He needs to learn how to shut up. It's enough already. I can't believe he hasn't learned over the past 14 years that he doesn't have a Super Bowl caliber team. And he's been talking as if he still has the Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin Cowboys. Jason Garrett is now in maybe the most awful situation that he could be in. He has to win a Super Bowl in order to maintain his job in Dallas. And I'm sorry, this Dallas team is not good enough to win the Super Bowl. Another big story that we have. Oh, Westwood sank the bogey. Oh, and still has a one-shot lead. Wow. Nice shot. We have the San Francisco 49ers hotshot QB, Colin Kaepernick, sends out a picture, and it's of him wearing a Miami Dolphins hat. I would love to know what all of you think about whether or not if Colin Kaepernick or anybody should be wearing a hat of the team that they are not on if it's in the same league. We do have a caller. Who is this?
Oh, hey, what's up? My name's Elwood, and I'm calling from Indianapolis. Actually, the topic you just, this isn't what I called about, but the topic you just discussed, that's one good thing about Indianapolis. You can get by with wearing any baseball hat you want on a football if you're on the Colts or the Pacers, and no one will say anything, you know, because old Reggie Wayne, if he goes to a Pacer game, he used to wear his, you know, Marlins hat if they're playing the Heat. No one said anything, so. But, no, to answer that question, no, you shouldn't be wearing another team's hat if you're in that league. I agree with you totally. It's like if you work at Walmart, don't be strutting around an old Target. So I think you should show a little loyalty, but it's kind of funny you ask that because they pull the little baseball. You know, whenever the Yankees are doing good, the Colts players from New York will have their little Yankees hats on. So I think a lot of it has to do with region, but as a general rule, no.
What did you want to talk about today?
What I called about was, hey, I listen to your show all the time. Love it. I like your opinion. And I live about 9 blocks from Lucas Oil. I got up the day tickets went on sale, went 2 hours early, got in line, and as I'm, you know, way back in line, I see him put a big white sheet of paper up on the window. The Denver-Indianapolis game has been pre-sold out. So I had to go to Ticket Scout first. I mean, this is going to be the game to end all games, especially in Indiana. But I was wondering, what's your take on this? In the game in October, who do you think is going to win it, Manning or Luck? Because it is turning into a big issue here. And I thought, oh, I'll call my boy and see what he thinks, because you're kind of neutral, because Luck's really won me over. I never thought, you know, I mean, I was the biggest Manning homer you ever met. Peyton. I tell you, this kid's won me over, and I'm kind of rooting for him. Yeah.
I tell you what, I love Andrew Luck. I think
me too.
He's the real deal. I think he has the potential to be the next Peyton Manning. The biggest difference that I see between the two teams right now is the defense. I think while Indy's defense played well above their heads last year, and they played very well, I think the way that the Denver Broncos formulated, and right, they lost Elvis Dumervil. They brought in Dwight Freeney. So they seem to, and with the emergence of Von Miller, who I think is going to be the NFL Defensive Player of the Year this year, I think he's just that explosive. I think that's going to be the reason, and also the depth at the wide receiver position.
Yeah,
Dwight
and Peyton have a good rapport, and that's going to help because those two work well. You know, finish each other's sentences type thing. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about that. And he took Stokely with him, and I always liked that. Oh, sorry, Blair White. They took him, and I was like, oh. So Peyton's got a lot of tools out there, and Denver's done a lot of things I like. But Indianapolis was a killer force last season, and they had a coach on his deathbed. Bruce Arians was filling in. Luck had never been a quarterback before. Everyone had written us off. We'd been through the season of hell the year before, and Luck went just as far as Peyton, went to the playoffs, lost to the Ravens. I mean, he did the same thing as Peyton. And I tell you what, I watched, they mic'd up Peyton and Luck at the Pro Bowl. It was interesting. Peyton's a little intimidated by this kid. You know, you could tell by his body language he wouldn't turn towards him or make eye contact.
I don't know if it was so much intimidation, but maybe awkwardness because of all the comparisons between Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning. I think that it could have been some of that. But one move that I love that the Indianapolis Colts made this year is bringing in Ahmad Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm. I love Bradshaw, that, too.
When he is healthy, and he has had some health issues, but he's always played at least 13 games. So he may miss a game or two or three throughout the season, but when he's on the field, he's productive. And if the one thing that he's going to bring to the Indianapolis Colts this year is going to be picking up the blitz. One of the reasons why Eli Manning is as healthy as he has been over the past couple of years is that Ahmad Bradshaw is among the top running backs at being able to pick up the blitz and then slip out into the flat. So I think he's definitely going to help keep Andrew Luck up more upright this year, which may bring you to even a more successful season for your young quarterback.
Oh, yeah, I'm expecting big things this season. Like I said, Andrew Luck's just going to get better and better. I mean, I was facing a situation of watching Peyton go downhill and the Colts go downhill, you know, for the next 5 years and just kind of watch my team suffer, where now I'm going to watch my team get better every year for the next 5 years. So, yeah, it's a definite turnaround. I mean, this is not the way I thought it was going, and I never thought I could warm up to another quarterback like Peyton, and I love Luck to death. You know, got my Luck jersey, got my big Luck poster in my man cave. I mean, this kid's the real deal. I like him. Peyton's a, you know, I kind of, when you see these people walking around Indy in their Peyton Manning Broncos jersey, I kind of give them the stink eye now. It's like, you know. So I'm excited about this season, but I just wondered what your take was, because that's going to be the game. That's going to be the second Super Bowl, that those two. You know, whenever Peyton used to play his little brother, we used to call that a Manning Bowl here in Indy, and those were kind of a big deal. When we had a Manning Bowl.
I'm a Giants fan, so I know, and it's funny because we actually have a Manning Bowl this year.
Yes,
Giants,
you do.
Their home opener is against the Denver Broncos. So it'll be the third installation of that series, with of course Peyton winning the first two. And I was at the first one, and I still have a bitter taste in my mouth because of that offensive pass interference call that they called on Steve Smith down the right sideline that would have set the Giants up for a field goal to go ahead. But I'll give you your victory, especially in that second one in Indy where
Peyton
really dominated that.
That was a beautiful game, you know. I wore my Peyton jersey and my little 18 hat, and that was awesome. But my nephew went with me, and they sold banners that said Manning Bowl, and it had Peyton and Eli on it, and he was waving it. And yeah, that was a good game. Yeah, I'll miss the Manning Bowls, but tell you what, this Luck Manning Bowl is going to be even better, I think. So.
Yeah, I tell you what, you're in good hands with Andrew Luck.
I'm not worried about it because Peyton's not getting any younger, but Andrew Luck is. So, you know, I think Indy did the right thing. It was a rough decision. You know, it was hard to do, but I mean, they got rid of Peyton. He needed to go. I mean, I know everybody loves Austin Collie. I know he's a good guy, but I mean, he's one hit from being Christopher Reeve. So, you know, I mean, they were smart to get rid of him. I mean, they did a lot of rough decisions, but they did a lot of smart decisions, you know, and Pagano and bringing in Grigson from the Eagles. I mean, he's a good general manager. I mean, at Colts camp, he gets down there and shakes hands with people and gets and mingles with – I mean, he's perfect for this area and what Colts fans expect. And, you know, there was a guy there in a Steelers jersey, and he came out with the Colts jersey and traded him, and everybody clapped. And I thought, that's what we need to see, somebody, you know, out doing stuff like – so, you know, you can always tell when a person's a good fit for a team, because I remember when Ron Artest was on the Pacers, and I was at Pacer games, everybody just leering at him, and I thought, oh – you are so not a right fit for this area. You know, and then the Malice in the Palace happened, and I thought, oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for training camp to start.
It's the greatest time. The one thing that I think is going to be key for the Colts this year is going to be the development of T.Y. Hilton. I think if he can continue, he had a great rookie season. If he can continue to be able to beat a lot of the single coverages because of Reggie Wayne on the other side, that's going to be huge for the Colts.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see about Reggie Wayne because it's going to be interesting to see how he performs, because last year everybody said he's too old. And I said, if that's too old, I want you to sign me up right now for being too old. And after the interviews, they would always pull Luck onto these little after Colt shows. And Luck was like a deer in headlights. I mean, come on, he's in the spotlight now. Reggie would go with him and kind of smooth the interviews. And, I mean, he really helped Luck out on a lot of the media stuff. And I think this year, Luck's going to have to stand a little bit more. They're going to have to wean him away from Wayne. But, yeah, Reggie Wayne, I cannot wait to see how he does, because I don't think he's too old. I think players are going to be able to keep going a little bit more every year, you know, with doctors and medicine and science, and I think we're going to see players go and go and go. So it'll be interesting.
And to be honest, I was one of those guys who thought that Reggie Wayne was too old this year.
You bet.
Now,
I did too.
Now a year later, I think he's still among the top 12 wide receivers in the entire game.
Oh, I agree totally.
He really shut me up last year as a critic, and Reggie will now hold a better place in my heart because of the fact that when everyone said he was done, he went out and he had to prove that he wasn't.
Well, you know, Peyton was the focus, the media, the center of that team, and Pagano was the new coach. And when you took Peyton out, and then Pagano was on his deathbed, and Arians was just a fill-in, and Luck was a green rookie, that team had no nucleus. And Reggie Wayne stepped up, became that team's nucleus, you know, fulfilled that role. I mean, and only somebody his age with that experience could have did it. You know, I mean, that's where being a little bit older come in handy, because if you think about it, that team had no core. I mean, the great Peyton was gone. Pagano's on his deathbed. You know, I mean, how do you replace Dungy? Caldwell you could replace with a wooden peg, but that's another story. I don't like him. But I'm just saying, it's going to be – I don't think he's too old either, and I said it too, but after I think he's got a few more years left in him. What do I know? But, you know, there's always somebody coming up to replace you is the sad part, but as long as he keeps performing, keep that guy there. He's good. You know,
yeah.
I'm just so ready for football to get going. I know I'm being repetitive, but dang, let's get this started.
I think Saturday we get the opening of most camps, so it's going to be real fun.
And I hate preseason, and I'll probably go just because I'm so pumped for football, because it's the same price as a regular ticket. And they put in, you know, I don't want to pay $200 to see Chandler Harnish, quarterback. You know, I want to see Andrew Luck, but I'll probably go. You know, worst one, I think it was in 11. Some genius got the bright idea putting the Colts in retro uniforms. But for us, that means evil Baltimore uniforms. So I'm sitting there at a preseason game watching Curtis Painter, quarterback, in a Baltimore Colts jersey. And I thought, boy, this sucks. But, I say that, but that's. Yeah, by the way, if you're listening, Colts people, no retro jerseys before 1984. That's not us. And Painter's probably an actual painter by now.
He's actually on the Giants roster as their fourth quarterback in their practice.
He went to the Patriots for a while, but you knew that was just a bleeding for information because, you know, the Pats always think they can beat us. You know,
Pats. All right, well, I appreciate your call. And
good
talk.
I love the show. Listen all the time. Keep up the good work, man, and let's get football going. See you, buddy.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Always good to talk football and to get a little bit more Midwest. Great to talk some Colts, and tell you what, Andrew Luck, if there's a young quarterback that is getting overshadowed by the running quarterbacks, you have your RG3s, you have your Russell Wilsons, you have your Colin Kaepernick. What about the guy that's going to be the best out of all of them? And that is Andrew Luck.
I think once the NFL defenses sort of figure out how to stop the pistol and the read option, because everything like that always gets figured out, just like the Wildcat. What has never gotten figured out is how to stop a pocket quarterback. When you have someone that can throw the ball wherever he wants to, it is unstoppable. So, Andrew Luck, I think, especially, I said it to our caller, if you get sort of the development that a T.Y. Hilton has, and then from the tight end positions, you have Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener, Kobe Fleener being Andrew Luck's teammate at Stanford, and Dwight Allen probably is the better all-around tight end because he's a better blocker. He's bigger, stronger, not as athletic as Fleener, but Fleener is one of those hybrid tight end wide receivers where he creates matchup problems in the passing end, but still needs to get that desire to block. And I think if he gets some sort of in the Dwight Allen frame, you're looking at something scary. You're looking at something along the lines of your Gronkowski Hernandez with having two big athletic tight ends who are good enough to be wide receivers, but because of their size, just creates so many matchup problems because they're going to be faster than your linebackers, and they're going to be bigger and taller than your safeties. And no matter who covers them, they're going to have that advantage. I want to thank everyone for listening today. We had Randy Zelia, the great founder of Backsports Page. You can find him at RZelia BSP, or I'm sorry, at Randy Z BSP, at Randy Z BSP. You can find us on Twitter at BackSportsPage and at Beyond the Bench. Find me at RStern33BSP. Check us out, www.backsportspage.com. A big thanks to NBA TV's Jared Greenberg. Can find him at NBA TV Jared. Everyone have a great week, and we will talk to you next one. Enjoy.